This is the world's greatest Springsteen podcast. Tom, I think it's episode 25.
I think you may be right.
I'm not positive on that. We should know that. But I think this is the quarter century. Well, I don't know. There's a word for the 25th something. But I think this is number 25. World's greatest Springsteen podcast with Fisherman and Tom. I'm Fisherman, and this is Tom. How you doing, Tom?
I'm doing pretty good. How are you?
I'm doing really good. We are recording on a Sunday morning. We've been recording on Saturday mornings, but we pushed it to Sunday because I had some personal business yesterday, and we are doing it before the Detroit Lions play. So if I sound rushed, it's because we are headed straight towards a kickoff deadline, and there is a lot to talk about in the world of Bruce Springsteen this week. So let's get right to it. We didn't record last week. There wasn't much to talk about, and we were both pretty busy with the Thanksgiving weekend. But one thing happened, and we want to talk about that, and that is the second return episode of From My Home to Yours was on E Street Radio, and Tom listened to it. I haven't even heard it yet, but Tom heard it, and he's going to file a report on From My Home to Yours, the California songs.
Yeah, I did listen. It was very good. Similar, it was as good as the last one he just did, what, about a month ago, because again, these songs were good. I knew them, most of them, unlike his shows from years earlier, where I never know what he's playing and I don't particularly like it. But that one he did from with the 60s song. So yeah, this was all songs that were related to California in some way. A lot of them just had the word California in there somewhere, and others were just California based bands. And so he played, let me see, like California Dreaming by the Mamas and the Papas. We all know that. He played Dr. Dre and Tupac, California Love. I like that. Brought me back to the 90s. And he did mention, after the Dr. Dre Tupac song, that Tupac's murderer was arrested, and he hopes that Tupac can get some what's the word,
justice,
some yes some posthumous justice.
Posthumous justice. Post, I mean, most justice for murder is posthumous.
Right. Well, yeah, that's true. Good point. Then he played some Don Henley, Roy Orbison, Tom Petty, Pet Shop Boys, Go West.
Pet Shop Boys.
Hear that? He played a song by Lana Del Rey, who he
loves. Lana Del Rey.
Yeah, he has gone on record as saying she's really good, and she is. I always liked that song. He didn't play this song that I know. This song I didn't know, but it was very good. It was similar in tone to the song from that movie with Leonardo DiCaprio. What the hell's the name of that movie?
The Wolf of Wall Street.
No, it was The Great Gatsby. The Great Gatsby.
I don't think I've ever seen that movie. I never read the book. I never saw the movie.
Yeah, it was really good. I think Tobey Maguire is in it. So anyway, during that movie, they play this song by Lana Del Rey called Young and Beautiful. Not to be confused with the song Young and Beautiful by Elvis Presley from Jailhouse Rock. But it's a completely different song. And but anyway, that I always loved that song, so I kind of got into her a bit with after that movie. And so we played her, a bunch of others. He talked a little bit, but you know, nothing. He didn't mention much of anything. He did say he was feeling, he said he was better, pretty much.
I read that. That made the rounds in the press everywhere. Bruce Springsteen feels 100%. His stomach is great. He's feeling good. And that was good news. And yeah, I think he didn't have any guests like last time.
Right. And, no guests. He just
kept it real low. You know, at the beginning, he did a lot of talking. In the early episodes, he did a lot of talking. Between every four songs, not only did he introduce the songs, he had something to say. And then in the middle episodes, he did a lot of just song introductions and then like one major monologue he would like put together. And he would write this. He didn't just do it on the cuff like we do. He wrote this out before he read it. And he would do like this one monologue soliloquy about something from his past, something going on in the world, whatever it was. And then later it became mostly just, he introduced the song coming up. He told you the song he just played like a DJ. And I think I understand that it's easier. I mean, when we were all stuck in the house, he put a long time into what he was going to say. And we're not seeing that in these later episodes, but it was cool. Last time he had the guests on, they spent a long time reminiscing. That's always good. And it doesn't take nearly as much preparation because it's all up here. So maybe he'll get some more guests in.
Yeah. He did also mention that he owes Don Henley a wedding gift. I guess he stiffed him and never gave him his wedding gift. So he said,
to hear that.
He apologized for that. And
did they play Hotel California?
Yes. I think so. I'm pretty sure that was the one. But
they must have played something, right? Boys of Summer? Boys of Summer?
Don Henley was Boys of Summer.
Boys of Summer. Out on the road today, I saw a Deadhead sticker on a Cadillac.
Now, how is that? Does he mention California in that song?
No, but summer. I mean, you know. You think of good weather. You think of California. You think of beaches and oceans. Maybe it is about California. I don't know. The Boys of Summer is about baseball, I thought. But it seems to be about, there's nobody on the beach, nobody on the road. Summer's in the air. I don't know it very that well off the tip of my tongue. Yeah. So then this week, so much this week. The first thing is, Steve Van Zandt and Maureen Van Zandt did a presentation for Darlene Love. She put on a Christmas concert and I believe it was sponsored or presented by Stevie and Maureen Van Zandt. And the surprise guest was Bruce, and he came out to present her, I believe it was a plaque for Merry Christmas, Baby, Please Come Home. She's probably most famous for singing this song on the David Letterman show every year for a decade or longer. David would ever come out and sing this same song as a Christmas tradition on the late night with David Letterman show, or the late show with David Letterman, the later years. And that song is now considered one of the great Christmas songs of all time, and it's gone platinum. And she was presented with the platinum plaque by Bruce himself.
Thank you, Darlene. Yes. She's my forever crush. Now, Darlene was born in Los Angeles. She began singing in the local church choir. And of course, that led to He's a Rebel, You Sure the Boy I Love, to Do Round One. Credited to the Crystals, but it was Darlene's voice filled with teenage longing that made those songs hits. Then, in 1963, she recorded the classic Christmas Baby, Please Come Home. The absolute greatest Christmas rock and roll song of all time. That song and Darlene has been a part of our holidays for 60 years. So I am here tonight to present Darlene with this platinum award for Christmas Baby Please Come Home. Congratulations, Darlene. We love you. Woo! Overdue. Well deserved.
So another fun fact about Darlene Love is she played Murtaugh's wife in all four Lethal Weapon movies. I know there's been a rumor that there's going to be a fifth Lethal Weapon movie. Not sure if that's real. And I'm not sure if Darlene Love is going to be in it, but she was in all four current Lethal Weapon movies as Murtaugh's wife.
Hello, baby.
Hi, honey.
I want you to meet...
Martin Riggs.
Hi, how are you?
This is my wife, Trish. My new partner, Martin Riggs. Martin's gonna join us for dinner.
Post okay with you?
What's for dinner? We'll see. What's for dinner? This is a Brown's chicken. Ouch!
It's roast.
How's a Brown roast like substance?
Roger. You're being an asshole.
I try not to be.
And, her second most famous Christmas song is from Saturday Night Live, Christmas for the Jews. That is probably her second most famous song. I don't know if people know that they play it every year on the Saturday Night Live Christmas special. I don't know if people know that is Darlene Love.
Well, it happens every year on Christmas Eve. All the happy Christian people take their leave. Yeah, the streets are deserted and that's big news. It's Christmas.
All right, so another big thing that happened this week for a lot of people, our show is on Spotify. Maybe I should embrace these Spotify playlist drops more. You know, I have every single show that Nugs has ever released, the 24-bit FLAC, the highest quality you can get. And so I don't use Spotify that much. I'll tell you this. About a week ago, I was listening to Spotify on my iPhone on the bus because I wanted to hear Van Halen. So for stuff that I don't really have a collection of, I might turn to Spotify. But for Bruce, if I'm going to listen to Bruce, I've got the highest quality. I don't really listen to Bruce on Spotify, but there's a lot of people, I guess, are not me and don't have every single Nugs release. And so these drops of playlists are exciting because it's the first time that they've been able to hear these songs short of buying the full shows that they come from. So this week they released another in the series of live playlist shows. And then you can make your own playlist. We know a friend named Dave who has made a playlist of all of it put together into one giant 10-hour playlist. He's reordered them in his fashion, the way he wants it. I don't think it's alphabetical. I think it's by year. I think he's got them in order by year. So these playlists are already released live Bruce from the Nug series. And if people don't know, the Nug series has been going on for a long time now, and there is a ton of it. And it's individual tracks, and they usually have a theme. Do you remember any of the themes previously before this one?
I think there was themes like love songs.
I was just going to say love songs. That's what stands up. There was one that was love songs, but they all have a theme.
Yeah. This one is pretty cohesive, though, because it's all piano.
Which is very cool.
So, yeah, it's almost like you could almost say it would be like a Devils in Dust playlist.
Not featuring Roy piano like Backstreet's, but Bruce Springsteen's solo piano. Whether it be from, I know it's a lot of Devils in Dust, but it has like E Street Band where he would sit down at the piano and play one song too. It's not just all from Devils in Dust, correct?
Correct. It goes up to 2016. And so, yeah, it's anytime he sits down on the piano, which is rare.
It goes back, too. It goes way, way back.
Goes back, yeah. I can tell you, it does. I don't think it's in order. Yeah, it is in order. So it goes from 75 to 2016.
What's the 75 solo piano song? It's not Thunder Road, is it? Because that's Roy, I think.
Yeah. So it starts out with For You from the famous CW Post College concert that obviously was released. They were all released by Bruce. Real quick, there's not many, but yeah, we got For You, Independence Day, now 1978. Then a show we just listened to. He plays Real World from the Shrine Auditorium, Christic Institute. And a second one from there, 10th Avenue Freeze Out. So two songs from the Christic shows. Then we got The Promise from the reunion tour. Then I Wish I Were Blind from Devils in Dust. Backstreets, Valentine's Day, Iceman, The River, Zero and Blind Terry, Lost in the Flood, Drive All Night, all of them from Devils in Dust.
Everything what I just show said. Is Drive All Night?
Drive All Night, it says it was from the Sovereign Bank Arena, but that's all it says. Where that is, I'm not sure. But the date is 11-22-05.
11-22-05. In a minute, when we finish up about this playlist, I want to talk about 11-7-05, which we just watched a bootleg video of that was the first Drive All Night in 24 years. So that's interesting that they put a Drive All Night out. Maybe he got a chance to, maybe he did it a little bit better three weeks later. So was that the full playlist or is there more?
There's two more. That's eight songs from Devils in Dust that's on this album.
That's where there was a lot of solo piano.
Yeah. And then it wraps up with two songs from 2016. Does This Bus Stop at 82nd Street from Wembley Stadium and Incident on 57th Street from Croke Park Stadium. I think those are both in England.
Croke Park is in Ireland. Bad Tom O'Donnell.
You better edit that out. I don't want to.
And I have videos of both of those shows, Wembley and Croke Park. So I'll have to take a look and cut those parts out. I'll throw them up on the Vimeo. Last night we were watching, as I was just saying, November 7th or 8th of 2005, Devils in Dust show from Philadelphia. That I just dubbed with brand new audio from EV2 and it sounded fantastic. It was not a Nugs, but it sure sounded damn good. Yeah, I think the only difference between that and a Nugs was on Nugs, you wouldn't hear the woman talking. There's still some audience chatter in the background. But other than that, the sound was crisp and really gorgeous. And we were watching this show and he played A Ties That Bind that we have never heard before. It was the lyrics of Ties That Bind with a completely different solo acoustic arrangement. Not even arrangement. It's not even the same song.
Hurting your eyes.
To me, it sounded like a lot of times when Bruce plays solo acoustic guitar, so I didn't really think anything of it. But to Tom, it nagged him. I know that melody. I know that song until he came up with it. So what's that Ties of Bind from Philly in 2005? What's he really playing there?
Yeah, it was so strange because, yeah, he does the Ties That Bind and very different. It had this melody that I couldn't. I said, "Man, what the hell is that song?" Because it was like he was playing a completely different song with the lyrics of "Ties That Bind." So I started singing it to myself. It was kind of like the game we play. What the hell's the game
Hurdle.
We play? When,
Hurdle.
So it's Hurdle. Okay. So I was doing, and I couldn't come up with it. But I said, I think it's from the River outtakes. So I looked it up. And then I thought maybe it's from the Promise box set. So I ended up, now I can't remember which it was. But I think the song was, because I looked up both and I finally saw the title and I said, that's it. So I played the song. This was all during your show. So I had to pause from watching the concert until I found out. I think I missed two songs.
Turn on the radio, turn off the lights. We'll bring
And yeah, he just set it to that music, to the music from that song, which wasn't released I believe it was The Promise. Okay, so it wasn't released till 2010. And this show is from 2005. And it's an outtake. I mean, where he came, how he would have come up with that, I don't know. He must have either. Really.
It was a piece of music he really wanted to put out there. He wasn't confident with the lyrics. I don't know.
Yeah, very strange. I'd love to hear the how he, how that came about.
You know? I'm going to guess. I don't like to speculate. I'm going to guess. But if Bruce Springsteen came on this show and we brought that up, we said, you know, in 2005, you played Ties That Bind to the music of this outtake. Why did you do that? I don't know.
You're right.
I don't think he has any idea. I don't know if there was any that much. It means so much more to us.
He would answer. He would not answer the question. That's for sure. He would go on and on. And sometimes we use different parts of this and parts of that, like kind of like we're in a car together. Yeah,
exactly. So, I was talking about, we do, you know, this podcast was kind of born out of the chat box on my weekly video stream on YouTube. We've been watching a different Springsteen concert at least once a week for a couple of years now on YouTube. Anyone's always welcome to join us, but that's where this podcast was born out of. And then we do that on Saturday night, occasional other nights by no means or reason. A lot of anniversaries of shows. But one of our regular viewers, Dave Hensel, he's got a channel. He's got a whole bunch of stuff. He's a big Bruce fan, but he's got a whole bunch of different stuff on his channel. And he started playing shows on Sunday mornings. I guess in the East Coast, it's Sunday midday. But for me, it was pretty early in the morning, 8 a.m. And this morning, he was showing the Heinz Theater in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, which when he put it up, it made me realize that was 19 years ago yesterday. And that was Flood Aid with Bruce Springsteen and Joe Grushecki. Do I say that right? Grushecki?
Yeah.
Joe Grushecki and the House Rockers at the Heinz Theater in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, December 2nd, 2004. And that was Flood Aid. It was a benefit for... There was a hurricane. I don't remember which woman's name. I guess it's not always women now. It's men and women. I'm old enough to remember when it was always women.
Yeah, it was actually Hurricane Ivan.
And that's not even a woman's name. So they're all over my face. 2004, and they were already... I'm old enough to remember. Are you old enough to remember that it was every hurricane was a female name? And at one point someone said, you can't do that. That's sexist. And they started throwing men's names into the.
That sounds like America.
That's the way
we do things now.
So Hurricane Ivan was catastrophic to the city of Pittsburgh, and Joe Grushecki is from Pittsburgh, and he asked Bruce to come and play a benefit show, and they played one show at the Heinz Theater, and I drove 5 hours from Detroit to be there, and we were watching it this morning, and it's a killer show. He comes out with the opener band that I'd never heard of, but I think they're a Jersey band, not a Pittsburgh band. They were called Exit 109. And
Exit 105.
Exit 105. I'm always getting off the wrong exit. So they played their set, but then Bruce came out and joined them and played All on the Watchtower.
Thank you. outside in the cold distance. Why can't I drive?
Approaching, the wind begins to die. see you in a little while.
Correction 105, thank you so much.
Thank you, Pittsburgh.
That's how it started. And then Bruce comes out with an acoustic guitar and proceeds to play three or four solo acoustic songs, including For You. Right?
Yeah, he does three. He does I Wish I If I Should Fall Behind. Land of Hope and Dreams and For You.
If I Should Fall Behind, solo acoustic, it was gorgeous. So anyway, by that time I was like in heaven, and whatever came next it was already worth the 5-hour ride and the $40 or whatever it cost me to get in 2004. I bought tickets on the sidewalk out front.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I drove there and I went with my cousin.
This was a great show. I actually have the DVD here if you can see it. And
that's what we were watching. That's the one.
Yeah, I remember buying this because I don't know if it was Backstreet's recommended it, saying how good the quality was. So I purchased it for that reason, and it was really good. The camera work was real good, real close up of Bruce.
And the sound is very good. My mission has been to take videos and make sure that they have the best sound possible. And if they don't, I dub them with the best sound possible. And I've compared that DVD with every available audio source of that show. And the DVD does have the best sound that's out there available. It sounds really good. We were really watching. I don't think either one of us wanted to come over and record the podcast. We wanted to keep watching the show. And they trip. What we didn't watch this morning and what was coming up is the Joe Grushecki and the House Rockers come out after the three song acoustic set, and they kind of trade off song by song on the set list. Joe Grushecki song, Bruce song, Joe Grushecki song, Bruce song. They play the two collaboration songs that are famous. There might be more collaborations, but there's the two that they're really famous. I can't remember the name of either one of them.
My
Code of Silence.
They do Code of Silence, which I believe was, did Joe Grushecki get some credit for?
Yeah, I thought they co-wrote it.
A writing credit maybe. Then My Favorite, which they did, was Never Be Enough Time, which I've always loved that song that they did together.
When the time run out.
Then there's a few Bruce songs not related to Joe Grushecki, because a lot of them were just his song, you know, Joe Grushecki songs. But he does do Lucky Town towards the end, which is very good. Murder Incorporated, Factory. Trying to see. This Hard Land. About it.
Factory,
yeah, that's an odd one.
It's a great show. It was a great show. It was worth the trip. I stayed at my cousin's house and spent one night, and then I drove back to Detroit the next day. Great time and a fantastic video keepsake. I go back to it every few years, and it was nice to watch this morning, 19 years ago, last night. I know that I got a kickoff to get to soon, but there's a few more things in Bruce news this week that I wanted to talk about. You were telling me that Max Weinberg's involved in some litigation.
Yeah. Apparently Max had this vintage car, this 57 Mercedes-Benz Roadster that he wanted restored. So he gave it to this garage in Florida, and they told him it would be $125,000 to restore this, whatever he needed done to it. So he entrusted them, and
I think it's time to put the dog down and get a new dog.
Yeah. Yeah. And so anyway, he according to his attorney, they pocketed the money, apparently, and so now he's suing for $375,000.
Pain and suffering?
Claiming, well, I don't know, but claiming, you know, they didn't do the work. And I suppose it even says that there's receipts, and there's some, there's a paper trail that showed that they took the money and used it for other things. So we'll see what happens with that.
We will. I mean, yeah. I'm sure he'll win, right? It sounds like he paid the money. He got shit in return. He'll win. Then the question is, are they collectible? You know, he'll have a judgment against him. They'll never be able to own anything ever again. But yeah. Will he ever get his money? And does he need it? Is it all about the principle? We don't know. I'm not going to try to get inside Max's head. He paid the money. The work didn't get done. He should get justice, but I don't know. That's not the world that I know.
There is another lawsuit going on. Springsteen himself is being sued by a dead man. The cover of the story says, "Springsteen stiffed my dad after using his GTO on album cover. New Jersey man says in suit." So apparently this man had a vintage GTO. It's a 68 Pontiac. And he was asked if he could drive to this location in Colts Neck. And it turns out this location was Bruce's house, which the man says he didn't realize at the time. So he met the photographer there. And soon after, Bruce showed up. And they did some photos of Bruce standing in front of this gentleman's car. There's some more photos of him inside the car. And they said, here's a check for, I believe it was $450 for this.
For the rental of the car?
But yeah. But he was promised more money if they ended up using the photos. So then comes this album, Only the Strong Survive, and there's his car on the cover, Bruce standing next to it, and throughout this time, this guy says he never actually got paid anything that he was promised, and he ended up getting COVID and died. So his son has gotten an attorney and is suing for money owed to him for this.
You know, an amount? Is there an amount on that attached to that lawsuit?
No, I don't believe they listed an amount. But his attorney is handling it, and Bruce's attorney has said that he's not going to comment on it at this time because he does not comment on his client's lawsuits.
Well, I don't blame him.
Yeah, we'll see what happens with that.
I will see what the contract said.
Yeah.
If he shook his hand and said, hey, if we use your picture, we'll send you a bonus, I wouldn't be, you know, expecting a huge payday. If the thing said, if we use your picture, you're going to get paid some kind of percentage off of the T-shirts and posters that that car ended up on, album covers.
Yeah, exactly. I don't, from the article I read, I didn't see anything in writing that was, but maybe there is something. Maybe it doesn't need to be in writing. I don't know. Well,
and then you said you saw an interview with Steve Van Zandt where he was talking about the intensity of the show, of the this tour.
Oh yeah. So yeah, Steve said that this current tour is the most intense tour that they've ever been on. And that they needed this break because it was so intense.
Didn't see that. I mean, I know it's almost the same set list. Okay, yeah, yeah. I know it's 3 hours on the dot, not 3.5. You know, the 4-hour show is really only a very small segment of 2016. It's like the last group of shows in those stadium shows in 2016, and maybe one or two shows sporadically through his career. 3.5, you know, was really the top mark normally. So now they're 3, but they're older, and the set list is certainly, you know, from start to finish, it keeps going. Aside from the 2 points where he brings it down, and you know, he does his little the Backstreet's Last Man Standing thing, and but even Backstreet's pretty intense. And then you know, they're also they were playing every other night, for like a long time. It just kept going. They were traveling. I know they travel in luxury, but it's still travel. And every other night they were playing someplace. So I can see that, you know, I don't know that I know they used to play every nights in a row, but they'd also have big chunks off and they didn't.
Well, I mean, this is hardly the most intense tour they've ever been on. You and I have seen plenty of shows and this is not even close to intense. When it comes to some of these concerts we have seen, I mean, we've seen some seriously intense shows. So no, it's nice
I'm not just talking about the show, though. He said it's an intense tour. Every other night for months since February, it just kept going and going. And musicians getting pulled at the last minute because of COVID tests. You know, there's so much that goes into it that we can't even think of. So, I mean, he didn't say it's the most intense show we've ever played. He said it's the most intense tour we've ever been on. And he wasn't on Born in the USA. I'm sure that was pretty intense tour. They played a billion places and they were raking in the money, but they were coming off a place where they didn't have money. Now they know how to do it. You know, now they know how to, you know, make sure that they're in the luxury accommodations and they've got private jets you know, it's a different beast than it was in 1984 where they, you know, they didn't even know what you do with stadium money. They know what to do with it now.
The opinions of Aaron do not reflect the opinions of the world's greatest Springsteen podcast. I just want everyone. All right.
I'm a big fan of the Detroit Lions and they are playing very shortly. So what else? Is there anything else this week going on in the Bruce world?
Yeah. In more legal news, there is a subpoena that has been issued regarding Ticketmaster and Live Nation by a senator, Richard Blumenthal, who is the chair of the U.S. Senate Permanent Subcommittee on Investigations. And he is investigating the ticket prices, the fees, and the resale practices of Bruce Springsteen. And
of Bruce Springsteen or of the shows as they were sold?
of the prices of this particular tour, and that's been in the news that you have defended, and ticket prices are the highest they've ever been. I mean, we've never seen prices like this.
So well, that's true for everything. I didn't go to Adam Sandler last night because I didn't want to spend over $100 to sit in the very top of an arena to see a comedian. I used to love to go to everything, but everything is expensive now. The world has gotten bigger. There's more people that want to go. There's people with a lot more money than me, and that's just what it costs to do things these days. I got into 4 Bruce shows very reasonable, as I've said many times. I've seen them do these investigations before. They usually turn up a lot of nothing, a lot of, that's the American way. Can sell something. If you buy it, you can sell it. There's some people that might think Ticketmaster is kind of shady in the fact that they sell their worst seats first. They create this false sense of demand and that you're not going to get in, and they fill the rafters first before they sell the best seats. But I never had a problem with that, because if you know that, you just ignore the first day sales and you just wait for your ticket. And you always get your ticket and you always sit well, and you sit well for a regular price. I have no problem with the system. What are they going to do? Say, you can't do that anymore. You can't make people think that there's only bad seats, because they got to sell the bad seats. I don't know. We'll see what the investigation digs up. There's been a lot of investigations. Usually there's been no changes, and this is what really gets me. This is why I'm so adamant about this as a ticket concert buyer. Because every time there are changes, it fucks the concert goer. We're the ones who get fucked in the investigation. They do things like ticketless entry, and everybody in your party must be present to enter, and then everybody's standing outside waiting for one guy when the show starts. It's so many nightmares can be attested back to people who don't really understand that supply and demand and ticketing and what it takes to sell a building. And who come in and say, we got to fix it. Because you can't fix it when there's 20,000 seats and 100,000 people want to buy 4 tickets each. The math doesn't add up. And tickets go for big prices because there are speculators out there who will sell them for a big price, because they know if someone pays them a big price, they'll take that money and find them their ticket. Whatever it is, there's always going to be a way for someone to make an extra buck off of a ticket. They try with dynamic price. Dynamic pricing didn't increase the price of tickets. It increased the price of the same tickets that would have been the ticket. When people saw $5,000 tickets show up, what they would have seen before dynamic pricing is no tickets show up. And then they would have gone to StubHub, and you know what they would have seen there? $5,000 tickets. That's all they did, is when the demand got so fierce that there was not enough tickets for people, the price went up to what they would be on a scalper site. And all people had to do was not buy them, and the price went down. And I can prove that in a town called Tulsa, Oklahoma, where tickets ended up going for $11 because nobody bought tickets. If nobody buys tickets, the price isn't set by how much Bruce Springsteen needs to make $500 a ticket. It's priced by what people are willing to spend in that area. And if you live in New York, you're fucked, man. You got to pay, because there's a fucking shit ton of people there willing to pay more than you are. And that is the official opinion of the world's greatest Springsteen podcast.
No, you heard it. You heard it here, folks. He is. Aaron says there's no such thing as a price increase. We're all dreaming. So, yeah, we'll see what happens. All I know is the prices are insane. And hopefully when you vote in 2024, you will keep this in mind.
Vote for someone who wants to butt their head into tickets, man. It never works out well for the consumer, I promise you. When politicians and lawmakers start regulating I'm a regulation guy. Don't poison my water. Don't poison my air. Don't rip off mom and pop on telephone scams. I'm all for regulation. But you know, you can't regulate supply and demand. It's a law of economics. Build a bigger stadium. That's the only way. When he came around again and played stadiums, tickets weren't as expensive because there were more of them, not because the bad dynamic pricing didn't kick in, because there was 60,000 seats per show instead of 20,000 seats per show. It's such basic math. Anyway, Tom, let's go watch football. I think that this was the 25th episode of the World's Greatest Springsteen Podcast. We just wrapped up with Spotify. They sent me this cool video that told me all the good things about our podcast. And the one that stood out was, I don't remember. They got some weird wording that makes you really feel good about yourself. Our video presentation on Spotify, people who watched the video were in the top 20% of all video podcasts on Spotify. I think I read that right.
Right. Yeah. And I did get our business cards last night. So thank you.
Awesome. That's before we were on Apple Music. And you can always just say, Alexa, play the World's Greatest Springsteen Podcast, and she'll play it for you on your Echo device. All right. So I think that's episode 25. I hope I wasn't wrong about that. It'll say up here on the screen if I was like, you idiot, there's one more. There's one more to go. But Maddie said this morning, no, it was last night. Last night he was watching that Devil's Industrial with us, and he said he would be here today for our Sunday morning recording. And I was willing to take bets that that wouldn't happen. And he is not here. He is sound asleep, I guarantee it. Because, and he's in the East Coast. So it's like, you know, 12, coming on 12:30 here. And I guarantee you, he's in about 20 minutes, he's going to text me and go, oh, I just woke up. But for Maddie and friend Tom, you do anything you want to say? You want to ask John Landau for tracks too?
Yeah, release tracks too. Come on.
Did I tell you about the birdie? Did I tell you about the birdie?
Yeah.
A little birdie told me that you might have a very good spring. That spring could be very good for you. And that you might need a new close to our show come springtime.
I hope you're right.
I hope I'm right too. That would be great. But in the meantime, John Landau, hook him up. Get him a tracks too. Come up with a new tagline. So for Maddie and for Tom, I am Fisherman, the bootlegger who pays the highest price, and the World's Greatest Springsteen Podcast loves you.